Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Somebody called me a honey badger, and then I extended it to you, Meg Brock. We're having a little fun.
I think it's an apt description.
My kids love those honey badger videos, you know, where they're like the toughest, fiercest animal that is a hunter and will hunt down those. So, in any event. But she's also an investigative reporter, local mom, Bucks County. And I think that for a lot of us moms, during especially the pandemic, if you will, our inner primal self, our inner protector or honey badger, if you will, really was brought out by unfair, unjust situations, lockdowns in the pandemic, because they messed with our kids. And that was really when, I think, Meg, when we first met, one of the first times that we met, that we talked, it was during all of that, the fallout from that. Your crime, if you will, was being a mom and involved loving mom and wife who just asked questions and wanted to shine a light or transparency. And you would have thought that you committed a violent crime in the local suburbs, Meg.
It's true. Apparently, the things that you get in trouble for are saying it's wrong to cut the breasts off of little girls and also saying that kids should go to school for over a 2-year period. It's amazing where we are as a society, right?
It truly is. It absolutely is. I'll ask you about a couple of things, and one of them is, so we do have the issue. Unfortunately, it's still here, even though President Trump, as promised, when he got into the White House, this was the question that I asked him when he came on here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT in Kale & Co. And that was my question that I asked to the president about this issue of biological boys being allowed to play right up against girls. And not just that, to not only play against girls, but be in their locker rooms where they're changing, be in their restrooms. And to me, this is this sort of stealthy issue to the Democrats that they were so... They really were not aware of what a big issue this continues to be. But Meg, it's not over. And here in Pennsylvania, a lot of school districts, as you well know, are doubling down on this.
Yeah, I mean, it's not over. And I think maybe I came on your show and we talked about this before, but an executive order isn't going to solve this issue. The thing that's going to solve this issue is when enough of the general population cares enough and has had enough to demand it from their local government, whether that's the school board, county, your governor. I mean, Josh Shapiro, I know, that loves to tout himself as a moderate. He's a huge progressive, particularly on this issue. I would say your listeners would do well to look up the LGBTQ Commission, which is an actual commission from Josh Shapiro's office that's basically committed to making sure LGBTQ issues, including men being in girls' sports, are proliferated throughout the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and that those who are fighting to keep men in girls' sports, fighting to keep men in girls' locker rooms, have the quote-unquote support they need from Governor Shapiro's office. There's so much. I mean, I've done so many, read so much public records work on this issue, specifically in Pennsylvania. I think the average person really has no idea how deeply embedded this is in the state government.
Yeah, and we need to be aware, because it's a lot. I think a lot of Republicans and or just somebody who voted for Trump just based on this issue and the economy might think, oh, it's over because he signed these executive orders. No, I would say it has just begun. So you and I think we are simpatico. We are on the same wavelength when it comes to these issues. If you don't already follow Meg E. Brock on X and on social media, I hope you do. And her great art columns in the Daily Caller and her latest exclusive talking about Dominic Dunlap, who started taking these female hormones, and what a nightmare this has been. I want to pivot really quick to something I think we may disagree on, Meg. And that is dogeing the Department of Education to the point that they dismantle it. So can you take me through on your,
I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with overall dismantling it. I mean, and to be honest, I'm probably not really, my opinions are very surfacey. I just know from I remember, think back to COVID, right? This is today, I believe, is the 5-year anniversary of when Governor Tom Wolf, I will never forget it, watching from my computer. And I think it was across the whole state saying schools were canceled for 2 weeks. Yeah. And I remember how hard that hit me, how deeply that hit me, and how I knew something was just really wrong with what was going on. But one of the things I know from reading records during COVID is how the Department of Education was really used as a lever of power to force people to force compliance with radical CDC guidelines in schools. Now, obviously, that wasn't effective in every state, as we saw some states kind of went their way, but in Pennsylvania, it was very effective. So I'm not necessarily against dismantling it. I just think that it could be a lever for the Trump administration to use, particularly in swing and purple and blue states, to hopefully help eradicate transgender ideology, DEI. I mean, all those things that we really need to see removed from public education, because they're based on Marxist philosophies and they're really detrimental to kids.
Yeah, and one thing I'll say is that my impression, Meg, is that in truth, I don't think that they'll be able to actually obliterate it, just because just as we've learned with the first issue we were talking about with the executive orders. So I think that in truth, they need congressional approvals to do something huge. And that's part of the bureaucracy, and there's a beauty to bureaucracy, right? It's intended so that not one administration can do something that's cutting too deep, if you will, that they can do, they can do so much. So I think what's happening here, as I look at it, is that, and that's why Linda McMahon is being used in this way, because she ran SBA. She's a businesswoman. I think what they're going to do is they're going to put all the student loan and the money, anything related to money, they'll just scooch it over to Treasury. I think Trump said that at some point. I apologize. I spend too many hours looking at all the audio and reading. But I believe that what Trump said, his intention was to put all the money, the loan, because the student loans are all under the Department of Education, scooch all of that under the Treasury Department. They're the money people. And then as far as some of the, you can put these in different departments that already exist and put those duties where they belong. And then you would have a tiny Department of Education that would have perhaps one little skill set. But my impression of this is that when it was created under the Carter, well, it was Jimmy Carter was the one at the request of the then teachers union. He did this basically as a favor to them. Mm-hmm. And essentially their main job has been to support the teachers union leadership. And that's my big take on it, and it's, I know it's an umbrella big overall.
Can I ask Meg a question?
Sure, of course, Dan.
Because
Meg knows you. Everybody loves Dan. When Dan was sick, I know, Meg, when he was sick, everybody was like, where's Dan? He's the glue that holds us together. He's our great executive producer of both here, you know, on the Dawn Show, and then you hear him on the Dom Show.
So in dealing with state government's relationship with federal government, Department of Education, have you seen cases where a very leftist state or local government was actually shut down by the federal Department of Education, where the state government was almost too radical for even the Department of Education? Because with you, I do fear that, like, states like Massachusetts or California, if we put the power in their hands, will that make things worse for the people of that particular state? Have you seen evidence of that at all, Meg? I'm just curious.
I mean, I personally haven't seen any evidence, and I mean, my this is just my personal opinion.
Okay.
Is that,
okay.
If you're willing to tell children that in school that who they are is so terrible, they need to physically, chemically, surgically mutilate their bodies to look different, and you feel that there is a right for a teacher or a guidance counselor to withhold that information from parents, I don't know if you can get much further left than that, right? How much further could we go? So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll see how all this plays out. Honestly, it's all over my pay grade. I just hope that schools and school districts, I think, like you had said earlier, Dawn, I mean, the biggest thing that's going to change is when normal people get involved and make change. And it's why local elections are so important, whether that's your school board, your county. I know Bucks County has local elections coming this fall. I mean, so many people sit these elections out, and everyone in the community has a voice, and that's one of the great ways you get to share your voice every year.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's what we realized with some of the school board level elections, that they matter. And I know the great Linda Kearns, you know, has talked a lot about this, that it's just as important that everybody is involved and aware of what's happening, for example, in upcoming local elections like in Bucks County. And by the way, you know, Linda, and I did not see this coming, Meg, maybe you saw it coming, but in the Bucks County School Board stuff, when those elections happened, it was devastating. It was like a kick in the teeth with the one midterm election. But in many ways, we should have seen it coming, because the Democrats in D.C. and at the national level, they were pumping six-figure amounts into tiny little elections locally. Mm-hmm. And like, I remember Tony Arroyo and others just saying, what the heck? I can't, you know, I have a day job. You know what I mean? I can't, you know, I don't have money to put this level of commercials and signs all over the place. Mm-hmm. But that's what they, so that's why we have to really watch it.
And it shows you too how important these elections are, right? Yeah. If, or at least to Democrats view these elections as very important, that they're willing to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to obtain like five school board seats, which is insane. It's a lot of money. But I think it really goes to the point of how important every election is and how important it is to be involved in your community.
Yeah. It's, do you want to promote your latest piece as far as Daily Caller that just dropped recently?
Yeah, I can talk about, this was a really, really sad story, actually, about a young adult. His name was Dominic, who passed away from a pulmonary embolism that seems to have been caused by him being on estrogen therapy. So he was dealing with, I spoke to his mom, and she said during COVID, during the lockdown, he became increasingly isolated, spending a lot of time at home, spending a lot of time online. It got involved in a kind of group chat situation where it was suggested that he talked about his pronouns. And then after discussing this ideology for a few months, decided he was transgender, ended up going on estrogen, which I learned a lot about estrogen in researching this project. I really didn't understand how even when women take oral estrogen, there's a lot of gatekeeping. There's a lot of things you have to think about, because estrogen can cause cardiovascular problems such as thrombosis. And so this boy, his family, his mom had a history of a clotting disorder that was never, does not seem to have been picked up on, or he was there was no indication that this, he was tested for this. And the estrogen dose was up to 8 milligrams oral estrogen, which is not FDA approved. There's no FDA approval for men using estrogen for gender affirming therapy for sex change. It is approved for men who are experiencing palliative prostate cancer to have, I believe it was a 6 milligram dose. So you just have some comparison. This healthy young man was put on an oral estrogen dose that was higher than what was recommended by the FDA for a man fighting prostate cancer. And ultimately he very tragically died of a thrombotic event. And it was I don't think people really, we talk a lot about kids, and obviously we need to stop this from going on for kids. But when you really dive into the types of medications and how they're being used off label without guardrails, you think, how does something like this happen? And it was just really a really tragic, and for me, it was an eye-opening story.
Well, I hope that Dominic's family sues, and I'm not a litigious person. I don't usually say that. I hate to say it, Meg, but I think, you know, as Zeoli always says, lawyers always win. And I think at the end of the day, if these different doctors, as well as the hospitals who back them, start realizing that they can be sued for being an activist and prescribing this stuff that's really powerful, maybe then that'll wake them up.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and I think too, like I agree. I mean, there are a bunch of detransitioner lawsuits that have already been filed. I think that what we're going to discover in the discovery process and what happens with those lawsuits is going to have a huge impact on whether or not these procedures continue to move forward. But I think it's also really important for people when they're talking about those who are struggling with gender confusion. There is, I think I'm sure you saw what happened with the Delaware congressman who identifies as a woman. And there was this accusation that calling him a man, which he is a man, was not decent or was unkind. And I think we have to realize how people who are struggling and they're confused in this way, it's not kindness to affirm their mental delusions. Because one of the things, there's an article I have coming out hopefully shortly, and I mentioned in the CAST review, which if your audience isn't aware of, that was a review that was published by the England's NIH last year in the spring, and they did a very thorough review on pediatric sex change. And one of the things they found that socially transitioning, which is when you have, say, like in a school, a child who wants to be a new name or dressed differently, they found that it didn't really have an impact on their mental health. But what it impacted was their likelihood to become medicalized. So the younger children were socially transitioned, the more likely they were to get puberty blockers, to get hormones like estrogen, and to ultimately, you know, that leads to surgery. So I think when we think about kids who are vulnerable, we should absolutely have tremendous compassion on them because they're struggling so deeply. And I would say that to anyone, be kind, be compassionate, but with the understanding that compassion is to rip them out of this ideological fire that is threatening to destroy them, body, mind, and soul. And that really is the way forward, is to compassionately tell these kids the truth and to give them resources to understand that they're perfect, as Bill Crystal says, they're perfect just the way they are.
Beautiful the way you are. Meg Brock, we have to leave it there. Thank you so much. Check out her latest pieces and the one to come soon at Daily Caller. Thanks, Meg. Really appreciate
you. Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate you, Dawn. Thank you.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.